what I am. Bother? That's a tiny-ass word for a gory big thing. He scratches his buzzed head. A crotch rash bothers me. Bad fish bothers me. Entitled dickweeds bother me. This? He shrugs. Piss on it. You like my angle more than any other pisshead in the world. Figure I'd return the favour, even if I really am bigger than your rusty ass. I laugh at that. He would have dwarfed my red self. You must know what I'm here to do. It isn't just infiltration. It will end with the fall of the society. Rise too high, in mud you lie. That's it? I ask incredulously. You're on board? He snorts. It took me 6 months on a torch ship to reach you. 3 months from Triton after Dancer showed me the truth. Was I confused? Damn straight. But still, I boarded the ship and had 3 months to reconsider. Still, I am here. So, I think the time for second-guessing my commitment has passed. Anyway, my gold brethren have been trying to kill me since I was born. He looks around, uncomfortable even after all we've shared, despite the jam field. Only people to ever treat me decently, or people who don't have a reason to. Low colours. You. I think it's time to return the favour. And what of the others? I ask intensely. Pebble. Clown. Not my secret to share. Quinn would have understood, he says slowly, fighting back something. Rest might go along. Thistle won't. Roke won't, not in a million years. Too in love with their own species. Don't know about the tall, arrogant one. Victra. And Mustang? I ask.
I don't give love advice, shithead.
He stands.
Say, just because I'm a revolutionary doesn't mean I can't get a massage from a pink, does it?
That would suck sack. I don't know, I laugh. I'm still figuring it out, to be honest. Slag it, I'm getting one. Back feels bloody broken.
His crooked teeth bare themselves as he laughs. Feels good. That's how I know it's right, Reap. Despite all this shit, it feels good in here.
He taps his thin chest.
It feels, how do you say, bloody damn good.
Victra finds me after I've said my goodbyes to Severo.
Augusta sent me to tell you the Ashlord's stateroom is yours.
Augustus is giving me the largest room.
Your ship, your spoils, he said. You know how particular he is about order.
I hope you know the way. I'm already lost.
She motions me along.
We walk in silence through the halls. I'm weary, but happy enough, knowing Severo was with me, that Ares still believes in me, and that Dancer is still alive out there. It's a salve on the pain from Quinn's death.
I suppose you know my family has betrayed the Arch-Governor, she says.
I'd heard, but you're still with us.
As I said, I do what I want. Mother doesn't control me or my accounts, like she does Antonio's.
She grins sideways, watching me. I like you when you're like this.
Like this?
I can't help but laugh.
What do you mean?
I don't know. You seem calm. At ease, despite what's happened.
And you seem particularly kind, I say.
Kind? A quaint fiction.
But we both know I'm far from kind.
We walk in silence till we reach the door to my stateroom. I glance back and see Ragnar trailing in the halls behind. If it weren't for the bandages on his body, I wouldn't have seen him at all. I motion him away. At the door, I search Victra's haughty eyes.
You could have sent a low color to tell me I was to be in the stateroom,
but then I wouldn't get to see you.
Is that the only reason? I ask. She smiles mischievously.
I think I'll keep my secrets.
After a moment she looks up at me.
But I do worry for you.
For me? I roll my eyes. What are you playing at, Victra?
Nothing,
she says, offended.
You're such a hypocrite, Dara.
Me?
Remember when Tactus discarded your violin because he was suspicious that you wanted something? Now you treat me the same way. Same as when I came to you in the gardens on Luna. Is it too much to believe I'm your friend and care about you?
She wrinkles her nose.
You're making me emotional, and I hate it.
I'm sorry, I say. You're just... I try to find the right words for the tall woman. There aren't any, so I shrug and say, It's hard knowing you're Antonia's sister. That's the full of it.
But I'm not her.
I realize that...
Do you?
She reaches out and touches my face. Her lips part searchingly. I remember the feel of them on mine before I launched myself through the spit tube. I let her kiss me then. Even if she is a cold woman, there is something in her heart for me. Different from Io. Different from Mustang. I move gently away from her hand and shake my head.
You are a strange man,
she says with a soft sigh. All the vulnerability that was in her now gone. Her claws return. She leans back against the wall opposite me, bending a knee and putting a boot on the wall, laughing at me with her eyes.
Here's the Victor I know. You love women, but you do not enjoy us.
Smile lines crease as her lips part slightly. My eyes cannot help but trace the slender contours of her neck, the strength in her slim shoulders, and the rise of her breasts. Her eyes burn into me.
There's much to enjoy. Do you even know how soft my skin is?
I cough out a laugh. You're mocking me.
As ever.
Victor is a schemer. It's her way. But for a moment she was vulnerable, and seeing that made all the difference. I killed the sexual tension the best way I know how. Good night, sister, I say, and kiss her on the brow.
Sister? Sister?
She laughs dismissively as I leave. It takes her a moment, but she calls to me.
Is it because you think me wicked?
I turn back to her. Wicked?
Is that why you've never wanted me?
She pauses, choosing her words with care.
Because you look down on me?
Why would you think that? I ask gently. She shrugs and looks around the hall, strangely hesitant.
I don't.
She twists her hands, trying to wring out the right words. She gestures to herself.
This is how I survive. Do you understand? It's how my mother taught me. It's what works.
What do you say we try something new? I offer. Walking back to her, I extend a hand. Darrow, contrary to popular rumor, I don't eat glass. I love music, dancing, and I'm very fond of fresh fruit, particularly strawberries. She snorts a laugh.
So stupid.
We're reintroducing ourselves.
No armor, just two people.
I'm waiting, I say playfully. Rolling her eyes, she steps forward, looking either way down the hall. She brings up her hand, fighting back a childish smile.
Victor, I like the way stone smells before rain falls.
She makes a face, cheeks flushing red. And, don't laugh, I actually hate the colour gold. Green goes better with my complexion. I cannot sleep. The bodies of those I've left behind float in the darkness with me. I wake a dozen times, flashes of bombs, slashing of swords ripping into my dreams. I earned these sleepless nights. I know that, and that's what makes them all the harder. I stand and pace my new quarters, wandering its expanse. 6 rooms, a small gymnasium, a large bath, a study, all belonging to the man who burned a moon, the father of the Furies. How could I sleep in a room like this? I take the Pegasus pendant from my pocket, almost forgetting it's a radium bomb. Wandering the halls of the ship, ghost-like, I look behind me, wondering if Ragnar follows. I told him to sleep, but I know little of his moods, how he thinks, what he does at night. There is much to learn. I pass through dimmed halls, past orange technicians and blue systems operators, who quiet and bend as I pass through metal halls down to the bowels of the ship where golds never tread. The ceilings are lower, meant for the red workers and brown janitors. This ship is a city, an island. All the colours are here. I remember the roster. Thousands of jobs, millions of moving parts. I examine a maintenance panel. What if the orange who worked it were to overload the panel? What would happen? I don't know. I wager a few golds really do. I make a note of it. I continue on, hunger drawing me to the mess hall. Food could easily be delivered to my rooms, but my valets have not yet been organized. Anyway, I hate being waited on. In the mess hall I find someone as sleepless as myself, sitting at a long metal table. Mustang. Chapter 24. Bacon and Eggs. I slide across from her. Can't sleep? I ask. She wraps her knuckles against her head. Lot rattling round. She nods to the clamour of pans back in the kitchens. The cook's beside himself, she says. Thinks I need a feast. Told him I just wanted bacon and eggs. Pretty sure he disregarded everything I said. He babbled something about pheasant. Has this earth-born accent, hard to understand. Moments later, a brown cook stumbles out from the kitchen carrying a tray of not only bacon and eggs, but pumpkin waffles, cured ham, cheeses, sausages, fruits, and a dozen other dishes. But no pheasant. His eyes turn the size of waffles when he sees me. Apologizing for something, he sets the tray down and disappears, only to reappear a minute later with even more food. "How much do you think we eat?" I ask him. He just stares at me. "Thank you," Mustang says. He mumbles something inaudible and backs away, bowing. "I think the Ash Lord was a bit different from us," I say. Mustang pushes the fruit toward me. "Thought you didn't like bacon," I say. She shrugs. "I had it every morning on Luna." She delicately butters her waffles. "Reminded me of you." She avoids my eyes. "Why can't you sleep?" "Not much good at it." "You never were, except when you have a hole in your stomach. You slept like a baby then." I laugh. "I think comas don't count."
We talk about anything but the things we should. Innocent and quiet, like two moths dancing around the same flame. Amazing how big the beds are, even on a starship, Mustang says. Mine's monstrous. Too big, really. Finally, someone else agrees. Half the time I sleep on the floor. You too? She shakes her head. Sometimes I hear noises and sleep in the closet, thinking if someone's coming for me, they won't look there. I've done that. Really does help. Except when the closet is big enough to fit a family of obsidians, then it's just as bad. She frowns suddenly. I wonder if obsidians cuddle. They don't. Her eyebrows rise. Have you researched it? I finish a handful of strawberries, shrugging as Mustang frowns at my manners. Obsidians believe in three types of touch. The touch of spring, the touch of summer, the touch of winter. After the Dark Revolt, where the Obsidians rose in arms against the Iron Ancestors, the Board of Quality Control debated destroying the entire color. You know how they gave them religion, stole their technology, but what they wished to kill most of all was the incredible kinship the Obsidians then possessed. So they instructed the shaman of the tribes, bought and paid for liars, to warn against touch, saying it weakened the spirit. So now, the Obsidians touch one another in sex. They touch each other to prevent death, and they touch each other to kill. No cuddling. I notice her watching me with a small smirk. But of course you knew all that.
I did.
She smiles. But sometimes it's nice to remember all that's going on inside you. Oh. I look away as she tries to hold my gaze. I forgot you can blush. She watches me for a moment. You probably don't know this, but one of my dissertations on Luna concentrated on mistakes in the sociological manipulation theorems used by the Board of Quality Control. She cuts a sausage delicately. I deemed them short-sighted. The chemical sexual sterilization of the pink genus, for instance, has led to a tragically high suicide rate within the gardens. Tragically. Most would have said inefficient. The rigidity of laws maintaining the hierarchy are so strict they'll one day break. 50 years from now? 100? Who knows? There was this one case we studied where a gold woman fell in love with an obsidian. They had a black market carver alter their reproductive organs so his seed was compatible with her eggs. They were found out and both were executed. The carvers killed. But things like this have happened 100 times. 1,000. They're just scrubbed from the record books. It's terrible, I say. And beautiful. Beautiful? I ask, repulsed. No one knows of these people, she says. No one but a handful of ghouls with access. The human spirit tries to break free again and again, not in hate like the Dark Revolt, but for love. They don't mimic each other. They aren't inspired by others who come before them. Each is willing to take the leap, thinking they are the first. That's bravery. And that means it's a part of who we are as people. Bravery. Would she say that if she knew one of those people sat across from her? Does she live in the world of theories Harmony spoke of? Or could she really understand? So how long, I wonder, she continues, till a group like the Sons of Ares finds the records, broadcasts them? They did it with Persephone, the girl who sang. It's only a matter of time. She pauses, squinting at me as I react involuntarily to the mention of Io.
What's wrong? I can't tell her what I'm thinking, so I lie. Dissertations, sociology. You and I specialize in very different things. I always wondered what your life was like on Luna. Mustang eyes me playfully.
Oh? So you thought about me?
Maybe.
Day and night. What is Mustang wearing? What is she dreaming about? What boy is she kiss...
She winces at that last part.
Darrow, I want to explain something.
You don't have to, I say, waving her off. With Cassius, it... Mustang, you don't owe me anything. You weren't mine. You aren't mine. You can do what you want, when you want, with whomever you want. I pause. Even though he is a gory damn jackass. She snorts a laugh. The humor fades as fast as it came. There's pain in her eyes, in her half-opened mouth. Her idle knife and fork hover over her forgotten plate. She looks down and shakes her head. I wanted it to be different, she murmurs. You know that. Mustang. I rest my hand on her wrist. Despite her strength, it's frail in my hard hands. Frail as the other girl's was when I held her in the deep mines. I couldn't help that girl. And now I feel like I can't help this woman. Would that my hands were meant to build. I would know what to say, what to do. Maybe in another life I would have been that man. In this one, my words, like my hands, are clumsy. All they can do is cut. All they can do is break. I think I know how you feel. Mustang jerks back from me.
How I feel?
I didn't mean... I pause, hearing a noise. We look over and the cook stands there awkwardly with another tray. He tiptoes forward, sets it down, and then leaves the room, backing away awkwardly. Darrow, shut up and listen. She peers fiercely up at me through the strands of hair that have fallen across her face.
You want to know how I feel? I'll spit it out at you. All my life I've been taught to regard my family over all else. What happened with my brother at the Institute, when I handed him over to you, that set me against everything I was raised to do. But I thought that you...
She takes a deep breath that wavers at the end. Were a person who earned my loyalty. And I thought that it would be so much more important if I gave it to you in that moment than to Adrius, who has never lifted a finger on my behalf. I knew it was the right thing to do, but it was a repudiation of my father, of all he taught me.
Do you even know what that means? He has broken families as easily as other men break sticks. He wields unimaginable power. But more than that, he is the man who taught me to ride horses, to read poems, and not just the military histories. The man who stood beside me, letting me raise myself up by my own strength when I fell. The man who couldn't look at me for 3 years after my mother died. That is the man I rejected for you. No, she corrects herself, not for you. For living differently. Living for more. More than pride. At the Institute, you and I decided to break the rules, to be decent in a place of horror.
So we made an army of loyal friends instead of slaves. We chose to be better. Then you spat in the face of that by leaving to become one of my father's killers. She puts a finger in the air.
No, don't speak. It's not your turn just because I pause.
She takes her time in gathering her thoughts, pushing away her plate.
Now, I'm sure you understand that I felt lost. One, because I thought I'd found someone special in you. Two, because I felt you were abandoning the idea that gave us the ability to conquer Olympus. Consider that I was vulnerable, lonely, and that perhaps I fell into Cassius's bed because I was hurt and needed a salve to my pain. Can you imagine that? You may answer.
I squirm on my cushion. I suppose.
Good. Now shove that idea up your ass.
Her lips make a hard line. I am not some frill-wearing tramp. I am a genius. I say this because it is a fact. I am smarter than any person you've ever met, except perhaps my twin. My heart does not make my brain a fool. I sought out a relationship with Cassius for the same reason I let the Sovereign think she was turning me against my father. To protect my family. She looks down at her food. I've always been able to manipulate people. Men, women, it makes no difference. Cassius was a walking wound, Darrow, raw and bloody, despite the fact it's been 2 years since you killed Julian. I saw it in him in a second, and I knew how I could make him love me. I gave him someone who would listen, someone who would fill the void. The sternness in her voice fades. She looks around as if she could escape the conversation she started. If she stopped, I would be happier for it. I made him think he could not live without me. I knew it was the only thing that could keep the rest of my house safe. I knew it was the best weapon I could wield in this game. Yet, I felt so cold, so horrible, like I was the cruel witch snaring Odysseus, making him fall in love, keeping him for my own selfish aims. It seemed so logical. And when he put his arms around me, I felt like I was drowning, like I was lost, suffocating under the weight of all I'd done, suffocating knowing there was a life ahead of me with someone I did not love. Yet it was for family. It was for the people I love, even if they don't deserve it. Many have sacrificed more. I could sacrifice that. She shakes her head. The tears that built there mirroring those that well in my own eyes. They fall when she says, "Then you walked in at the gala and... and it was like the ground had broken open to swallow me. I felt like a fraud. A wicked girl who'd contrived a reason to do something stupid." She tries to wipe her eyes. "Can't you see why I did it? I didn't want you to die. I don't want you to die, not like my brother Claudius, not like Pax. I would have done anything to stop it."
"I can stop it."
"You're not invincible, Darrow. I know you think you are. But one day you'll find out you aren't as strong as you think you are, and I'll be alone."
She goes silent, as all that has welled up inside her breaks loose. She does not sob, but the tears come. She's the type of woman to be embarrassed by them. It breaks me to see this. "You are not wicked," I say, as I take her hand in mine. "You are not cruel." She shakes her head, trying to pull away. I take her jaw between the fingers of my right hand and bend her head till her eyes find a home in mine. "And what you do for the people you love cannot be judged. Do you understand?" I deepen my voice. "Do you understand?" She nods. It should not be this way. The Gulls have everything. Yet they demand sacrifices even from their own. This place is sick. This empire broken.
It eats its kings, its queens, as hungrily as it does the paupers who mill its earth. But it cannot have this woman as it had the girl I buried. I will not let it devour her. I will not let it devour my family in Lycos. I will break it, even if it claims me in the end. I wipe the tears from her face with my thumb. She is different from her people, and when she tries to do as they do, it cracks her heart to the core. Looking at her, I know I was wrong. She's not a distraction. She does not compromise my mission. She is the point of it all. Yet I cannot kiss her. Not now, when I must break her heart to break this empire. It would not be fair. I've fallen in love with her, but she's fallen for my lies.
You can't trust him,
she says quietly.
Who? I ask, startled by her sudden words.
My twin.
She whispers as though he sits in the corner of the room.
He's not a man like you. He's something else. When he looks at us, when he looks at people, he sees sacks of bone and meat. We don't really exist to him.
I frown as she clutches my hand.
Darrow, listen to me. He is the monster they don't know how to write stories about. You cannot trust him.
The way she says it makes me know she understands our pact. I don't trust him, I say, but I need him.
We can win this war without him, she says.
I thought you said I wasn't strong enough.
You're not,
she says with a smile. Not by yourself. She dons her lopsided grin.
You need me.
If only it were so simple. I leave Mustang for my rooms soon after. The halls are quiet, and I feel a shade drifting through some metal realm. I don't know how to accept her help, or how I should handle her. Seeing her with Cassius wounded me more than I'll ever tell her, and part of me knows not all of it could have been a manipulation. He was never a monster, and if he ever becomes one, I know it'll be because of me. The door to my suite hisses open. A hand settles over my shoulder. I turn to see Ragnar's chest. I didn't even hear him.
Someone breathes inside.
Theodora, probably. She's my pink steward. You like her?
Gold breath.
I nod, not asking how he knows, and take my razor from my arm. It whispers into a sword as I step through. The lights are on, muted. I search the suite's rooms with Ragnar to find the jackal sitting in my lounge with a sherry. He chuckles at our weapons.
I do admit, I am quite threatening.
He's wearing a bathrobe and slippers.
I excuse Ragnar. With his wounds he should be resting.
Reluctantly he trudges out.
Seems no one sleeps on this ship, I say, as I join the jackal on the couch. I imagine we have to restructure our arrangement a bit.
Fond of understatements, aren't you? He sips the liquor and sighs.
Thought I'd drown in that damn lagoon. I always thought my death would be something grand. Launched into the sun, beheaded by a political rival. Then when it came...
He shudders, looking so very frail and boyish. It was just a careless coldness, like the rocks of the Institute falling all around me again, in that mine. He's right. There is no warmth in death. I cried like a child when I thought I was dying after Cassius stabbed me. Obviously, this changes our strategy, but I don't believe it must change our alliance.
Nor do I agree. We'll need your spies more than ever. Pliny won't take my ascension lightly, and you're stuck here in your father's court. The Politico will try to remove us both.
I make no mention of the sons of Ares. As I guessed, they were forgotten by all as soon as I tipped that wine into Cassius's lap.
Pliny will have to go, but you and I should maintain social distance until then, so he doesn't know the threat against him is unified. Better for him to misunderstand our individual resources.
And so the Telemannuses still talk with me, I say.
True, they do want me dead.
As they should.
I don't begrudge them it. It's just damn inconvenient.
He hands me a holocom from his pocket. They're synced. I'll be calling my ships to meet us, and I imagine you'll stay here with your new prize. Wouldn't do to have shuttles going back and forth.
I want to ask him about Leto. Why he killed him. But why show a devil you know his strength? It just makes me a threat to him. And I've seen how he deals with threats. Better to play ignorant and make sure I'm always useful.
War presents us with more opportunities, I say, depending on how far we want it to spread.
I do believe I take your meaning.
All others will try to suffocate the flames, to preserve what they have, especially Pliny and your sister.
Well, then we must be cleverer.
She doesn't get hurt. That part of our agreement is static.
If ever she's wounded, I believe it'll be from you, not me.
He might be right.
But I'm on your level. Fan the flames. Spread the war. Win it. Take the spoils.
I think I know just how to do it. What can your network tell me about the shipyards of Ganymede?
Part 3. Conquer. When falls the iron rain, be brave, be brave. Lorn al Arcos. Chapter 25. Praetors.
We are undone. That is what the Arch-Governor of Callisto has said.
Arch-Governor Nero au Augustus peers around the table to see if we understand the gravity of his words. The aquiline angles of his face catch the ship's war room lights, hollowing his cheeks, and giving him the look of a falcon peering down its beak.
And why should he not? The Corps rallies against us. Neptune is in far orbit. Vespasian's ships will be 6 months in coming to reinforce us. All this while my own bannermen hide behind their shields in their cities on Mars, sending only the second and third born to aid us.
He looks at the two far members of the table. Their feebleness cripples us.
And now I sit here in council with my praetors, my men of arms. And what grand schemes do they devise?
Run. That's what they say. We fled Luna a month ago, and we've not stopped running since, because the Sovereign was crafty, and her forces beat us to Mars. This is not how I thought it would go. But then again, none of this is my damn fault. Cautious bloody fools surround the Arch-Governor. Gold's too frightened to lose all the favor and power they've gained in the past to risk any of it now. Worse, they squeeze me out. Alliances form against me. You can see it in their eyes, in their shoulders. My gain is their loss. Even those who followed my lead on Luna, even those I saved from certain death. They do the same to the Jackal, and they think it a victory he is not here in this room bickering with them. Their mistake.
I sit 10 chairs down from my master at the massive cherry oak table in the war room of his flagship, the 6-kilometer dreadnought Invictus. The ceiling is 40 meters above us, the room overly grand and imposing. A carved relief of a lion glares out from the center of the table. Over 40 places are empty. Trusted advisers gone, having abandoned Augustus like rats from a sinking ship. Those with us are Pliny, Praetor Cavax, his son Daxo, and 60 of Augustus's most powerful praetors, legates, and bannermen. They do not glare at me. Nothing so childish. These Gauls preside over 1 billion souls, so they simply ignore me and push doubt into Augustus about my ideas. Are we in agreement, then, with the arch-governor of Callisto? Are we undone? Augustus demands. Before any can answer, the grand doors hiss open, retracting into the marbled walls. Mustang strolls through, tossing an apple hand to hand. Apologies for my tardiness. She beams at her father, approaches him, and gives him a too gracious kiss on his lion-head ring. I sent word over an hour ago. Augustus says,
Oh?
Mustang spares a look at Pliny. I must have missed it. I only knew you were here because I went looking for my brother to play a game of chess. She laughs at the joke. Only the Telemannuses get it. Sighing, she makes her way to the far end of the table, squeezing Daxo and Cavax on their shoulders as she passes. Cavax greets her with rumbling, warm words. She sits and kicks her military boots up. Did I miss anything? Of course I didn't. Dithering as always. Her father's cheek twitches. This is not a stable. He eyes her boots. Sighing, she brings her boots down and shines the apple on her black sleeve. She's one of a very few women in the room. Agrippina Aulus Julii should be here, but it was her betrayal that depleted Augustus's fleet of the numbers he needed to capture Mars quickly, and it was her betrayal that made Augustus put men on Victra to make sure her loyalty to him is true. It took nearly all of my clout with the man to keep her out of the brig. We've been chased from the core worlds here, far beyond the orbital path of Mars. Our asteroid mining operations are seized, Augustus's assets frozen, and his cities, those that did not surrender already to the Sovereign, are besieged. Not to mention there are bounties on our heads. The old men don't like that I have the second highest bounty behind Augustus. Before we were interrupted, Augustus continues, I believe someone was justifying their Snap. His voice falls away as Mustang takes a loud bite of her apple. She looks around at the annoyed faces. I stifle a laugh. My liege. Pliny leans forward. I'm afraid there is no alternative but to continue our tactical retreat. If things continue in this manner, we will lose, and you, my liege, will be tried for... Snap. He flinches before finishing. Treason. He looks around the table to his bought and paid for allies. There is but one path available to us. Continue to run with our fleet till Vespasian's reinforcements arrive from Neptune. Augustus murmurs. In 6 months. The Politico nods. Or surrender.
Would that you had killed Octavia when you had the chance, boy,
Cavax says. If I had, everyone here would be dead, I reply. Daxo nods.
He meant no offense. Wistful thinking.
Why didn't you kill Octavia?
Pliny squints at me skeptically.
I couldn't have. I was in a room with Aja Agrimas. Perhaps if you were there, you could have done better,
but I'm a mortal man.
The Praetors, who know their business, laugh. Even Lorn our Arcos wouldn't have dared. Augustus mutters, and I once saw him kill Stained without a razor. Darrow did as he could. He turns his attention on me. Do you think we should run now as well? It makes you look weak.
We are weak,
Pliny replies. But this makes him look wise.
Wise men read books about history, Pliny. Strong men write them.
Stop quoting law now, Arcos! Pliny snaps. I thought you'd be open to all knowledge.
Your many years of life no doubt make you an authority on innumerable things,
Pliny says melodically.
Do recycle more maxims from old warriors, so we may learn more of life and wisdom.
This isn't about me, dear Pliny, so cut the ad hominems. A gesture to the arch-governor. This is about our liege. This is about his fate.
How theatrical of you to note, Darrow.
Augustus rubs his eyes, tired of our bickering.
The young can't help but be eager, Pliny continues.
But we must remember there is no dishonour in prudence, my liege. 6 months' delay is a small price to pay for victory.
He splays out his long-fingered hands.
In fact, time is our friend. Octavia cannot afford to scour the solar system for us, not with the Senate so divided at home. Her grasping hand will be like iron. It will rake along the backs of the other arch-governors, and it will not be long before those who follow her begin to chafe at her orders. They will learn why we fight against her. Namely, that she is not our representative, but is instead an empress. This will give us time, which will give us power, which will give us the ability to sue for profitable peace.
Peter Kavax slams his fist on the table. Piss on this!
A titan of a man, he's carved more from rock than flesh. His neck is so thick that I couldn't wrap even my hands around it. Unlike most Gauls, he has shaved his head and permitted his beard to grow. It is thick and dyed blood red. When the lights dim, it glows like a brand in the night. Only 3 fingers remain on his left hand. They say his son Daxo bit them off as a child. Though Daxo always smiles and, with his soft voice, suggests that it was his younger brother, Pax. The Telemannuses are the only Praetors in the room not beholden, in one way or another, to Pliny. I like Kavax.
It chafes my balls. This pixie talk chafes my balls,
Kavax sneers.
We should not be in this position. Give me leave, my liege, and I will take 1,000 of my guard to treat with the coward who did not answer your summons.
Apologies, my darling,
he whispers to his favourite fox, Sophocles, a red-gold, sharp-eared thing that flinches at the loud sound of its master's voice. Sophocles eats little jelly beans from Kavax's massive palm.
We wait for Kavax's attention to return to his words. You were saying, Kavax?
Augustus prods with a quick smile he reserves for his favourites.
Father,
Daxo nudges the larger man.
Kavax looks up, startled. Oh, and when their balls are ripped off and made to dangle from their own earlobes, others will remember you are ruler of Mars, and they will beg to aid you, Nero.
Satisfied, he goes back to feeding Sophocles jelly beans.
And they will know that we few lords were found loyal,
Daxo quickly adds, waving to the gulls around the table who nod appreciatively. Daxo sucks on a stick of cinnamon. He smiles even more than Pax, though his are half as grand and twice as mischievous. The only frown I've yet seen on his face was when he saw the jackal at the gala.
That particular grudge will not fade. Nor should it. The jackal took their packs. In reply, the telemanisters demanded his head. In turn, Augustus banished the jackal from Mars. But now, war brings new complications, new necessities. And the jackal seems to have been forgiven in his father's eyes, if not those of the telemanisters. I watched them carefully. They are not stupid, despite the guise they enjoy wearing. I only hope they remain ignorant of my alliance with Pax's killer.
All should be reminded that fealty is not easily cast off. Daxo finishes, his voice astonishingly cordial. A visit from my father and my sisters would remind other bannermen of their duties to you in times of war.
He tilts his head playfully, allowing us to admire the workmanship of the gold angels engraved into his scalp.
It is in the Telemannus nature to leave an impression. Perhaps it would swell our ranks. My thunder lords, Augustus smiles, ever eager for violence?
He traces a finger along the back of his long left hand. But no. That reminder must wait.
Punishment can only be doled out in victory. It would look petty, the sad flailing of a drowned man, considering my fleet is scattered and my legions trapped behind the shields of my cities.
He looks to Pliny and asks how the rest of our trade allies fare. I sneak a glance at Mustang. She notices and raises an eyebrow at me, wondering when we shall begin.
All our politicos have been received, Pliny says slowly.
Today Pliny wears a very serious coat of black lipstick.
As you know, my politicos and I conferred after we fled from Luna, and we developed a rather advanced theoretical breakdown of potential alliance shifts.
With computers? Kavax asks with a booming laugh.
With computers,
Pliny continues, irritated.
Simulations were performed by my green analysts. Of the Galilean moons, Io, Callisto, Ganymede, and Europa, none will cast the lot in with us, neither in simulation nor actuality.
Hardly surprising,
a hawkish praetor mutters.
We have the same results from the moons of Saturn.
Pliny continues.
Naturally, they fear the repercussions of choosing the wrong side. The Saturn governors are a lost cause for now. They see Rhea's corpse in their sky every day. In the Galilean sector, the presence of Lorne Au Arcos on Europa is a problem. His isolationist political leanings have proven infectious to the arch-governors of Jupiter's moons, particularly since his private army is twice again as large as any of the arch-governors.
Isolation? More like retirement.
Augustus sighs. Perhaps he has the right of it.
You would go mad, Father, Mustang says from the end of the table. No scheming, no plots or stratagems, just family and time to spend with Adrius and me.
His smile is tight, unreadable. How well my daughter knows me. What worries me most, Pliny says, is that the Galileans, in their own words, doubt the validity of our cause.
That's because we don't have a cause,
I moan, remembering my role.
At least not so far as anyone else cares. Explain,
the arch-governor demands.
He's getting to it, Father, Mustang says. Darrow plays for drama.
I make a show of looking around the room.
It's safe to say that the gentle gulls in this room understand human nature, yes? Even if we did not, what motivates us? A cause? No. None of us have a cause. Freedom, liberty, justice. I roll my eyes. Hardly. What do we care that the sovereign acts like an empress? What do we care about the compact and the liberties it extends goals? Nothing. This is about power. It is always about power. We fight her because we attached ourselves to a star, the Arch-Governor, but the star falls, fades. Kavax half rises from his seat. Don't insult your lord as if... As if he's what, a fool? He's not, so come off it. The Bellona take Mars. They will get the contracts, the government positions. We will be pushed to the fringe, dead or irrelevant. My voice plays with the audience. Power is the only thing of worth in this world. Consider Tactus Au Wrath, a loyal ally of mine for 3 years. But as soon as my star began to fall, he stole from me and departed out the back door, a thief in the night. How many empty seats are here that were filled before Luna? So many men and women who would have bled for Augustus. So many men and women who would have given their eyes for him when he sat on his dais in Nagir. Now, I dust off my hands. We are losing. To run is to wither and die. If we want to rise again, draw the Galileans to our cause, marshal the governors of Saturn to our banners, then we show them we are not powerless. Show them we drip with power. We are arbiters of life and death. We, not the Bellona, are the House of Mars. Pliny begins to say something, but Augustus motions him to be quiet. What would you propose? The Galilean families are soft for Luna for one reason. Commerce. Ganymede has her shipyards. Callisto is little more than a factory of greys and obsidians for the Society's armies. Europa is an ocean world of banking and deep-sea mining and vacation homes. Io is the breadbasket to any world along Jupiter's orbital path. They depend too much on commerce with the core to run to our side. And even the basest child knows what happened when the Ash Lord descended upon Rhea. The praetors nod along. So we must impress them. We must terrify them so that they know our power can touch them at any time, and they cannot risk alienating us. How? Augustus asks. They're all on the hook now. I set my razor on the table so they know what business I propose. We take their ships. We take their children. We take them as allies as the Spartans took their wives. By force in the night. Silence forms around me. Then comes the uproar. Pliny lets his praetors slash at the idea. His energy he spends whispering in Augustus's ear. I glance at Mustang, but she watches the others, gauging them. Boasts! The Arch-Governor quiets the room and readdresses me. I've not heard a plan. One plan, two parts. I touch a datapad, and the hollow the Jackal's agents gave me expands over the table to show Ganymede. The moon shines bright with blues and greens from its oceans and forests, brilliant against the marbled white and orange of Jupiter's vaporous surface. Grey shipyards ring the moon. I zoom in so that they stretch across and above the table. I list the ships registered, highlighting one in particular. Ganymede has a moonbreaker. Whistles from around the table. A moonbreaker? Someone whispers. Is this information reliable? Augustus asks. I nod. Very. My fingers twitch, rotating the image of the docks. In the shadow of an orbital dock floats a ship like my Pax, but newer, larger, black as night, and 8 kilometers in length.